From XPR, Expat Progressive Radio, broadcasting live to 72 countries around the world, it's The Bill Show, progressive news and opinion on American politics from Americans overseas. Now, here's Bill. And welcome, Billsters. How are you? And it's time for another show. Another dark show. Welcome to The Bill Show, and it is another time in the week when we basically take a look at politics in the United States from a progressive point of view, from afar, here on The Bill Show on Expat Progressive Radio. Now, we were thinking of doing a show this week. First of all, we had to do a little bit of a feature on the George W. Bush Memorial Library. And there are too many jokes that go with that. But evidently, a bunch of presidents got together to lie and say, you know, just how really good George looks in a suit. I mean, I think that's probably the only thing you could say positive. So we're going to kind of try to remind everybody, as his popularity ratings go up towards 60% right now for George W. Bush, let's all try to remind each other of exactly how bad a president George W. Bush was. We'll talk a little bit about that. Then we are going to be going to Bill and talking a little bit about a new measure that has been gutted in Congress that evidently allows congressional staffers and people who work for your local congressmen and senators to engage in insider trading, and it's legal. We're going to look at that. That's fun. We also, the regrettable thing that happened in Bangladesh this week, in which 300 garment workers were killed in Bangladesh in a catastrophic building collapse, which basically could have been avoided, and the building standards there. And it brings up the big topic of multinational corporations working within the United States, engaging these people who really run sweatshops in places like Bangladesh. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And then finally, we're going to preview a little bit the Boston bombing, which we did a show on last week, which, by the way, was That was a tough thing for the city of Boston to go through. But a lot of people on the right who are cynical, crazy, insane have been on the airwaves floating some of the most dangerous rhetoric after the Boston bombing. We're going to take a look at the usual cast of nutcases in our tinfoil hat segment. And so we have a lot of discussion to go, and hope you stay with us. We'll be back in one moment.
Next time on Frontline, if you have a 401k or an IRA that you're depending on to retire, don't miss this report.
A lot of 401k programs stink.
You put up 100% of the capital, you take 100% of the risk, and you get 30% of the return.
From Wall Street's perspective, 401ks are a fantastic business.
This whole thing's a scam, and people are really getting hurt.
Frontline investigates.
I'll be working for the rest of my life.
The Retirement Gamble. Watch online or on air beginning April 23rd.
Yes, if you have a chance, you should catch that PBS documentary. It's available at frontline.org, an investigation that basically goes into an investigation to your 401k. Evidently, an economics student decided, he looked at his 401k and he said, I don't have that much money in it. And then he went around looking at where the money went. Well, evidently. fees. Up to two-thirds of your 401k can be deducted in fees by the banks that we bailed out of the economic crisis. So while we bailed them out, they're out bilking grandma and grandpa out of their retirements. Hi, just here to cheer you up. Have a look at that, Bo. It's a fantastic documentary. Now, one of the things that I did want to get to today was the Bush Library, because George Bush evidently has a library now. It's one book, My Pet Goat. George Bush's library, and I saw the thing of all the living presidents, and George Herbert Walker Bush looked a bit the socks, man. I don't know if you've seen the picture of him with the socks. He looked, yeah. You want some yogurt? You know, I mean, he just looked. Yeah, I know I should make fun of him. God bless him. He's lovely.
That woman scares me. Mrs. Bush. Mrs. Bush Sr. She scares the crap out of me, and I think she should. But anyway, evidently they all got together, and they had to make up nice shit to say about George's presidency. And then I heard Obama talk, and I just almost threw up. This was our hopey, changey, progressive president. And he started talking about the family, you know, and he started having to make up shit. It's like, well, he looks great in a suit, you know, that kind of thing. But then Obama said this.
To know the man is to like the man. Because he's comfortable in his own skin. He knows who he is. He doesn't put on any pretenses. He takes his job seriously, but he doesn't take himself too seriously. He is a good man. But we also know something about George Bush, the leader. As we walk through this library, obviously we're reminded of the incredible strength and resolve that came through that bullhorn as he stood amid the rubble and the ruins of Ground Zero, promising to deliver justice to those who had sought to destroy our way of life.
Jeez, Barack, you guys want to get a room? I mean, let's not forget the rest of that story, right? Then he ran off and invaded the wrong country. 100,000 people dead. You know, you didn't finish how that thing ended then. But anyway, I looked around and I basically found this article. I was trawling the internet as I usually do, and said somebody did a poll at the time of the presidential library. Evidently, God, this kills me. 2 out of 6 Americans don't view George W. Bush as a fair president. They judge him as a good president.
Stop mocking me!
Yes, you're just mocking me now, aren't you? You're trying to make us all crazy.
Stop mocking me!
Stop it. For God's sake. 2 out of 6 think George W. Bush was a good president. Evidently, his approval ratings are at about 60% now. Oh, my God. This is painful. So, as a public service, I know that you have a bad memory. I know that we all have, like, a really bad memory. Kind of like a puppy that leaves the room. So, as a public service, on the occasion of George W. Bush's dedication of his George W. Bush Presidential Library, in convention, a guy named Steve Rosenberg over at Alternet compiled the 50 reasons as to why George Bush is not a good president. Thank you. And here are just some of the reasons George Bush was a bad president. Number one, he stole the presidency. You remember that in the year 2000? People may forget that he purged the Florida rolls of more than 50,000 African-American voters before Election Day, went to the Supreme Court where GOP-appointed majority stopped a recount that would have awarded the president the presidency to Vice President Al Gore. We can't forget that. Number two, Bush's lies started with race. He ran on being a uniter, not a divider. Then, of course, he came in, divided the entire country. He covered up his past. Yeah, he was a party boy. That's right. He got away with desertion during the Vietnam War. He was reported in AWOL over a year from his assigned unit, the Texas Air National Guard, which other military outfits called the Champagne Division. Oh, and Georgie, this really nice guy, he also loved the death penalty. As Texas governor from 1995 to 2000, he signed the most execution orders of any governor in U.S. history. 152 people, including the mentally ill, women who were domestic abuse victims, all of them, but he spared one person who was a serial killer. He was a corporate chill on day one. That's right. People would come to Georgie and tell them their wish lists. In fact, he would get together with most CEOs, went to Austin to reportedly educate him on their political wish lists. He gutted the Kyoto Protocol. Didn't want to sign that. That was for global warming. He ignored warnings about Osama bin Laden in August 6, 2001. Intelligence briefing titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike in the U.S. Meanwhile, his chief anti-terrorism advisor, Richard Clark, and first secretary of the Treasury, Paul O'Neill, testified in Congress that he was intent on invading Iraq, regardless of what anything said. He kept reading a picture book to grade schoolers for 7 minutes after his top aides told him that the World Trade Centers had been attacked on 9/11. Then Air Force One flew away from Washington, D.C., vanishing for hours after the attack. He turned on Iraq, not Afghanistan, which, by the way, turned into a shitstorm. 100,000 people dead. He attacked the UN weapons inspectors who told them there were no weapons of mass destruction there in the first place. He flat out lied about Iraq's weapons. He invented the evidence in a major speech in 2002. Said, "We cannot wait for final proof, the smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud," and it was all bullshit. All bullshit. All bullshit. He abandoned the International Criminal Court. He was put Colin Powell, one of the most famous black generals in America, in front of the UN with falsified evidence. He launched a war into CIA whistleblowers. He pardoned the guy who leaked Valerie Plame's name to the press, a undercover CIA operative for political reasons. He pardoned him on the last day of his administration. He launched the Second Iraq War. Yeah, the entire Baghdad was looted except for the oil ministry. The Pentagon failure to plan for a military occupation and transition to civilian rule was seen as Baghdad was looted while troops guarded the oil ministry, suggesting this war was fought for oil riches and nothing else. The war did not make the U.S. safer. U.S. troops were given unsafe gear during the war. That's right, inadequate vests for protection against snipers to Humvees that could not protect soldiers from roadside bombs. The military did not sufficiently equip its soldiers in Iraq, leading to epidemic brain injuries amongst the people that went off there and fought his fucking war. He never attended one soldier's funeral. For the years after the war started, Bush never attended a funeral, even though, as of June 2005, 144 soldiers of the 1,700 killed thus far were laid to rest at Arlington National Cemetery, only 2 miles from the White House. The list of top Bush officials were corporate employers made billions in Pentagon contracts, starting with Vice President Dick Cheney and Halliburton, which made a cool $390.5 billion, including his daughter Liz Cheney, who ran a $300 million Middle East partnership program during the time of the Iraq War. And here's one of my very, very, very favorites. Bush ignored the international ban on torture. Yeah, we started torturing people. Suspected terrorists were captured and tortured by the U.S. military's Baghdad Abu Ghraib prison. In the highest profile example of how the Bush White House ignored international agreements such as the Geneva Convention that banned torture and created a secret system of detention that was unmasked when photos were made public to media outlets. He created a black hole at Gitmo. Oh, yes, that's right. His own little torture chamber in the back of the castle. The Bush White House created the offshore military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, as well as secret detention sites in Eastern Europe to evade domestic and military justice systems. Many of the men still jailed in Cuba were turned over to the U.S. by bounty hunters in the Mideast. Bush violated the U.S. Constitution as well. Yes, the Bush White House ignored basic civil liberties, most notably by launching a massive domestic spying program where millions of Americans' online activities were monitored with the help of big telecom companies. The government had no search warrant or court authority for any of this. Iraq War created an amazing debt crisis. The total cost of the Iraq and Afghan wars reaches between $4 trillion and $6 trillion. That's when you add in the cost of all the poor people. That's right, the veterans who came back and their medical costs and the fact that they don't have arms and legs. That should be totaled up probably too. This guy's brilliant. He cut veterans' health care funding. I kid you fucking not. At the height of the Iraq War, the White House cut funding for veterans' health care by several billion dollars, slashed more than $1 billion from military housing and opposing extending health care to National Guard families, even as they were repeatedly tapped for extended and repeat overseas deployment. Then Bush decided to cut income tax. And you'll never guess who he cut the income tax for. In 2001 and 2003, a series of bills lowered income tax rates, cutting federal revenues as the cost of the foreign wars escalated. The tax cut disproportionately benefited, guess who? His rich buddies! With roughly one quarter going to the top 1% of incomes compared to 8.9% going to the middle 20%. The cuts were supposed to expire in 2013, but most of them are still on the books. Thanks, Uncle George. He assaulted reproductive rights from the earliest days of the first term. George Bush's White House led a prolonged assault on reproductive rights. He cut funds for UN family planning programs, barred military bases from offering abortions, put right-wing evangelicals in regulatory positions where they rejected new birth control drugs, and issued regulations making fetuses, but not women, eligible for federal health care. He cut Pell Grants, yeah, for poor students. His administration froze Pell Grants for years and tightened eligibility for loans, affecting 1.5 million low-income students. He also eliminated other federal job training programs that targeted young people. He turned the corporations loose on the environment. Oh, yes, he did. Bush's environmental record was truly appalling, starting with the abandoning of a pledge to tax carbon emissions and then withdrawing from the Kyoto Protocol on greenhouse gases. The Sierra Club lists 300 actions his staff took to undermine federal laws, from cutting enforcement budgets to putting industry lobbyists in charges of agencies to keeping energy policies secret. Basically, what he did is he appointed these lobbyists for the companies to regulate the companies. Said the theory of said evolution was a theory. In your case, it is. His school reform effort, what a wonderful one. No Child Left Behind. The initiative made preparation of standardized tests and resulting test scores the top priority in the schools, to the dismay of legions of educators who felt that there was more to learning than just taking a test. He appointed a flank of right-wing judges. His two judges picked for the Supreme Court, John Roberts and Samuel Alito, have reliably sided with pro-business interests and social conservatives. He also elevated U.S. District Court Judge Charles Pickering to the appeals court, despite his segregationist. That's right, he doesn't like the darkies. He appointed him anyway. There you go. He gutted the DOJ's voting rights section. Oh, why would you do that? Well, you swindled your way into one election. Why not another? Average household incomes fell during Bush's time as president. When Bush took office in 2000, the median household income was $52,000. In 2008, they were $50,303, a drop of 4.2%, making Bush the only recent two-term president to preside over a drop in income of, you know, the middle class. But it's true, Georgie didn't let the children get away. Yes, that's right. George was also increasing children's poverty in America. A census also found that 11.6 million children lived below the poverty line when Clinton left office. That number grew to 14.1 million. Congratulations! They aren't left behind. They're poor. They're weak from starvation and they can't run to school. Good work, George! What a fabulous guy. Rounding off the list, millions more lacked access to health care. Following these poverty trends, the number of Americans without health insurance was 38.4 million when Clinton left office. When Bush left office, 46.3 million. That's right, 8 million more people who haven't got health insurance. Bush let Black New Orleans drown. Yes, oh, how could we forget? Hurricane Katrina exposed Bush's attitude toward the poor. He didn't visit the city after the storm destroyed the poorest section. He praised the Federal Emergency Management Agency director, who had fucked it up, as doing a heck of a job, as the federal government did little to help thousands of the storm's victims in the aftermath during rebuilding. He pandered to the religious right. Months before Katrina hit, Bush flew to the White House to sign a bill to try to stop the comatose Terry Schiavo's feeding tube from being removed, saying the sanctity of life was at stake, but, you know, I'm not going down there to Katrina to talk to anybody who... Set record for the fewest amount of press conferences. Evidently, George didn't like being bothered. During his first term, that was defined by the 9/11 attacks, he had the fewest press conferences of any modern president and had never met with the New York Times editorial board. He took the most vacation time. Evidently, George didn't like working. Reporters analyzing Bush's record found that he took off more than 1,020 days in 2 4-year terms. More than one out of every 3 days, Georgie Boy was on vacation. No other modern president comes close. Bush also set the record for the longest vacation among modern presidents, 5 weeks. Well, Dick Cheney was back home. Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, and Don Rumsfeld. Oh, he gave us Dick Cheney. Cheney ran the White House, Rove the political operation, and Rumsfeld oversaw the wars that resulted in the death of thousands and thousands. He escaped accountability for his actions from Iraq War General Tommy Franks' declaration that we don't do body counts to numerous efforts to impeach Bush and top administration officials, primarily over launching the Iraq War. He has never been held account to any official domestic or international tribunal on anything. And he may have stolen the 2004 election as well. The closest Bush came to a public referendum on his presidency was the 2004 election, which came down to the swing state of Ohio. There, the GOP's voter suppression tactics rivaled Florida in 2000, and many unresolved questions remain about whether the former GOP Secretary of State altered the election night totals from the rural Bible Belt counties. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you George W. Bush, who obviously is.
He is a good man.
We'll be right back.
Dear parents, much of what we learn in this world
comes directly from you.
Whatever your message is, it will become part of us forever.
Please teach us to accept one another. Teach us to respect one another.
Please, do not fill our minds with hatred. Do not expose us to bigotry.
Do not teach us to judge each other
by race,
religion,
orientation, or the color of our skin.
Teach us the concept of tolerance.
Teach us to understand one another.
Teach us to accept people
of different cultures
and persons with different beliefs than yours.
Please help us to create a world
where every man, woman, and child is treated equally.
Dear parents,
please don't teach us words of hate. We learn from you every moment. If you use a certain word
which might be hurtful to others,
we will repeat that word. Please don't show us acts of hate.
If you act against people of different faiths,
we will repeat your actions.
Dear parents, where are your children?
And we are relying on you
to help us create a world where every person is tolerant of one another.
Now it's time for Firing Line with the Two Bills.
And welcome to Firing Line, friends and neighbors. And we don't have Bill in the studio today. Bill is currently away. So I've called him on his mobile so that we could get a little dialogue going with you. Bill, you there?
I am here. How are you, Bill?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. We were going to have a bit of a talk today about the Stock Act, but you had some things that you did want to talk about for this show, and one was the Bangladeshi disaster that happened in the news. Wasn't that right?
Yes, the Bangladeshi thing. I do want to come back and talk about this Storm Act.
Right.
But I'd like to bring this up about the Bangladesh factory collapse
right.
first, because one of the things about this Bangladeshi factory is that it makes clothes for companies like Walmart and The Gap.
Right.
And there was some really interesting stuff that happened on Twitter.
Let's detail, some people out there may not know exactly what we're referring to. There was a collapse of a building, a garment workers' building in Bangladesh. And I think this happened this week. And how many were killed?
Did, and there's quite a bit more to the story as far as the owners of the building. Even after it was inspected, they claimed that there really wasn't a problem.
Mm.
There was a bank in the building, and that bank told its workers stay away
right.
until we resolve this.
Yeah.
But there were several, the main use of the building was in manufacturing for garments.
Sweatshops. They were running sweatshops up there. And
they have been for
right.
a while.
And they basically some of the people evidently were told to go back to work, even though they knew the building was unsafe. And the long and the short of it is we have, I forget about the death toll. It's in the hundreds.
Well, it's over 300 now.
It's over 300.
And they're still finding people.
Yeah. And so this is something that's very, very troubling to see these kind of conditions in third world countries making stuff for Walmart and the Gap and all these commercial film firms in the United States.
It's so they can make a few pennies more. And frankly, there has been, I know the management at the Gap had been asked to sign an agreement that would have ended this kind of practice in Bangladesh.
Right.
And yet they chose not to. They were leading up to sign it. Then all of a sudden they got cold feet. They backed off. And they did not go ahead with it. And at this point, we've had a couple of interesting things that have happened in this story. The first one is that there were an awful lot of inappropriate parts of this story from GOP members and from different people doing it. But my criticism is actually against the left this time.
Why?
There are several prominent people in, quote, the blogosphere who are on the left but are very much in the mold of a neoliberal
right.
Ideology where they basically strongly believe in the free market. And one of the most prominent of those is a guy who writes for Slate called Matt Iglesias.
Matt Iglesias, okay.
Well, he did a post on it, and I'm looking at a story just for background off of Alternet, and
yeah.
Justin Doolittle has written a story about it, and the fact of the matter is, Justin's right about this. The post that Matt did has received a fair amount of criticism, both in the Twitter sphere and in the blogosphere and a lot of people, because it was very cold and ignorant. That he cobbled it together quickly.
What did he say?
Well, basically what he did is he talked about originally that it was a fire, but let's forgive him for that because you make mistakes in stories. But what he did was he said that essentially he felt that it's okay for Bangladesh to have weaker safety standards than the United States on the grounds that poor countries are naturally willing to accept greater risk in the name of economic development. And, you know, on its face, that's plausible.
No, are you telling
me? Yeah.
What an asshole.
You know, Iglesias seems to think that accepting weak standards was some sort of a conscious collective decision on the part of the people of Bangladesh.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Okay, well, what he said was that Bangladesh is a lot poorer than the United States, and there are very good reasons for the Bangladeshi people to make different choices in regards to safety than Americans.
Yeah.
That's true whether you're talking about an individual calculus or a collective.
Right.
Safety rules that are appropriate for the U.S. would be unnecessarily immiserating in much poorer Bangladesh.
Yeah, but you know, so you're advocating that these people don't have a right to be safe at work because they live in a poorer country.
Well, that's what Matt Iglesias was saying.
What a dick! I'm sorry. I mean, you've just crossed the path into dictum that they should be able to work in some place that isn't necessarily collapsing, inspected four times, and then after it's inspected, the people say, don't go there, and the employers force their workers to go back to work in a building that collapses and kills them. That's not acceptable, Julio Iglesias, if that is your real name. Sorry.
Well, actually, Matt does write for Slate, and he is rather famous here, but let's go on and talk about some of the other things that have happened off of this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are some good sides to this story. One, the actual guys that owned that factory and forced the workers to go back in as well have been arrested now by the Bangladeshi government.
Very good. That's
but
good.
That's just happened in the last 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the prime minister of Bangladesh is demanding justice for these factory owners. And the nation's highest court has ordered them to appear.
Good.
Now, Iglesias is evidently unaware or unarrested in the most salient facts of the stories. The workers were the one who actually noticed the cracks in the building and protested, but they were bullied and threatened into working, okay? Factory owners ignored a police order to evacuate the building.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
This is about illegal economic exploitation and regulators that are either unwilling or unable to enforce the law.
Yep, that's right.
Using these corpses to make an argument that this disaster and others like it should just be viewed as mere speed bumps on the path of free market ideology is just crap.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm with you, dude. I'm with you 1,000%. I think it's a shameful exercise. Listen, the one other thing, and thank you for mentioning the Bangladeshi one. The one other thing you did say you wanted to talk about was something I managed to have a look at as well. And I absolutely, when Rachel Maddow did a piece on this just the other week, I was kind of like dumbstruck. It's the Stock Act, which is the Stop Trading.
I think it's the STORM Act.
S-T-O-R-M. No, it's actually the Stock Act. Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge, or Stock Act, which was passed in 2012. Now, what they've done is they've made a change to the Stock Act, which was approved unanimously by Congress last week. That means that top federal employees, including staffers on Capitol Hill and in the White House, will not have to publicly disclose their financial holdings. And that requirement was part of the original Stock Act that was passed in Congress early in Obama's administration. It's dead now. And basically what this means is that staffers and people who work for the Congress, the people inside the congressman's office, can insider trade. And it's legal.
Legally.
It's legal. It's all fucking legal. So, say I work for...
Well, that's an interesting thing, then. That means that there's one they're not even... law
yeah.
for the Congress critters and their staff.
Yeah.
And another set of laws for the rest of us.
That's... Oh, yeah.
But wouldn't the Congress critters be in a place where they'd actually know and hear about some stuff that other people don't?
Okay, yeah.
Substantially ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, here's a little drop on this here, was that the original Stock Act passed last year after reports in the Wall Street Journal and in elsewhere, along with academic studies, I'm reading off the HuffPost, noted that lawmakers with access to marketing moving information were suspiciously lucky in the timing of their stock trades, strangely enough. One widely cited estimate suggests that congressional portfolios outperformed the broader market, you and me, by 12%.
Well, Bill, isn't this just another sign of this neoliberal, neoconservative cabal that's running things, that no matter how we vote,
every one of them voted
these
for this.
These people are thumbing their nose at the American people in a way that's just disgusting.
And, you know, the whole thing was squizzled in the last couple of weeks when things were crazy. You know, that they actually signed this. They couldn't pass a fucking gun legislation or even get it to debate that killed 23 little kids. But when it comes to their own fucking money, right through in an hour.
Well, interestingly, there was another thing that went through right away. And I just really am so disappointed in this. This, you know, this sequester thing that's been going on.
Yeah.
It seems that people in Congress and people in business were getting inconvenienced because the sequester cuts cut across the board, and all of a sudden the FAA wasn't able to keep all of the air traffic controllers hired.
And who flies the congressman home? Airplanes. And they didn't want to have to wait.
Just like the Stock Act, Bill.
Yeah, they came back and they mended it just for the airplanes. Never mind the poor lady on Medicare down the street. Never mind the poor slob dying slowly of poverty somewhere in shithole Tennessee. But they didn't want the planes not to run on time so they could get home.
But they didn't bother fixing the things where we feed poor families, children, so they can go to school.
Oh my God. They didn't address
any of that stuff, but they can sure take care of their friends that fly airplanes.
Yep. That was my outrage for the week. I just, when I read this after you gave it to me, it's like they don't even try to disguise it anymore. They're all bought. They're just bought, you know? They're not even ashamed of it. Because everyone signed that. It was passed unanimously in the House and Senate. And you know the guy who defended it, the guy who actually defended it, he's a former Undersecretary of State from the Bush administration. And he said, after the panel's recommendation that we not put, you know, disclose what, you know, staffers make, he said, we need to take a look at the whole set of things we are publicizing and ask ourselves if we are in the right place, says Chu. We are not saying you should not do this for some people, but we need to stop and look at this before the broad sweep without a more careful view of the risks involved. That's brilliant, Bill. It's been lovely.
Okay, can I close on one thing?
Absolutely can. Go, man.
Currently, they're doing something that I don't believe they should be doing anymore. In Washington, D.C., just happening, it should be finished now, all of the Washington, D.C. sycophantic press corps is at something called the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah.
And Obama, you know, of all the presidents, Obama's really good at making jokes in these things.
He's funny.
And
Obama's funny.
He said something that I just want to say, this is actually, I think this is funny.
Yeah.
But one of the statements he said is, I'm not the strapping young Muslim socialist I used to be.
Mm. Yeah, well, I'm not sure whether I ever used to be that. I'm just, I think Barack has drunk the Kool-Aid, and I really do think that even though I agree with him on gun rights, and I was very positive in the early part of the year about his chances, I have been absolutely really disgusted by some of the stuff that he's managed to do through the back door here. And this stuff, you know, just, this thing is just disgraceful. Because basically, one of the big things, the big White House statement that came out when he passed this act in this fervor of, you know, hopey, changey stuff, you know, we're going to do right and all that bullshit. And then he gets pressured, you know, whether he gets pressured or not, they wanted to do this. Listen, I want to thank you very much for coming in and on Skype. I feel like almost like a spy. I'm talking to you. It worked pretty well. It worked pretty well, didn't it?
Look, I think it's very good. And Bill, we'll talk to you again. Thank you to all the listeners of The Bill Show. Thanks. See ya.
Take care, Bill. Bye-bye.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm absolutely fantastic. But you'll never guess. This is so exciting. I'm really excited.
About what?
I'm excited because The Bill Show is now available on Stitcher Radio.
Well, that's cool. What's Stitcher Radio?
Stitcher Radio is this great platform where basically you can listen to every one of your favorite podcasts. Everything from NPR to PBS to Fox News. Oh,
what kind?
If you have to listen to Fox News. You can listen to all of it on an app on your mobile phone.
So anybody that has a smartphone.
Anybody that has a smartphone.
Can listen to this.
Can listen to Stitcher.
On Stitcher.
And we are under The Bill Show. This Week in Politics, and you can listen to our opinions and our views and join in listening to what we talk about on our program. Isn't that exciting, Bill?
That's really exciting, but I'm a little confused. You know, we're sitting here in front of a microphone, and you're giving me a lot of hand movements while you're doing this. You do realize that people don't get to see you.
I think that's preferable.
Well, that's the theme, friends and neighbors, for the Tinfoil Hat Brigade. Yes, the news and commentary that you listen to because you hate your own head. And yes, the monkeys in the cage on the right have gone absolutely nuts post-Boston, and some of it's very scary. So let's have a listen to what they've been up to in the press. Oh, my God, how embarrassing.
But you bring the Patsies in, the Lee Harvey Oswalds, the Tim McVeighs, to be part of this. This is unprecedented. And, you know, I went and bought champagne 4 years ago when the Copenhagen documents came out that they were fraudulently lying about global warming to create a global tax. I popped champagne on the air. I called it a Death Star exploding event.
So let me just say this to those at the highest echelons of government that know the tagging system. They know all about events, not files, events. Let me send this message very clear. We know who this Saudi national is. And it is in your best interest and in the best interest of integrity and trust for the people of the United States of America. It's best coming from you, not coming from a news organization. It's best coming from you. You have until Monday. We have information on who this man is. And listen to me carefully in your little event world. We know he is a very bad, bad, bad man. I know that doesn't make any sense to you right now.
Muslim jihadists are a threat to the world. Yet President Obama will not say that.
You know, he's got his Miranda rights, the right to remain silent. I think it's a mistake not to treat him as an enemy combatant. The evidence is obviously out there.
Right.
It's not like we need evidence for the trial because that exists.
Right.
So what's the point?
Also, why not just shoot up the boat? If we're not going to talk to him and get any information about the sale, about any foreign
what's
influence.
The point?
Yeah, why not? They should have just kept shooting when they caught him in the boat. She ought to be in prison for wearing a hijab. This immigration policy of you know, us assimilating immigrants into our culture isn't really working. No, they're assimilating us into their culture. Did she get a clitorectomy too?
Well, I don't know the answer to that.
Really just pointing out the hypocrisy of the left, how they push for gun control 10 seconds after Sandy Hook shooting. And yet when something else happens, they refuse to say that, hey, it's not the inanimate object, it's actually the person. So when people like yourself go on and say, hey, we've got to get rid of guns, we've got to push for gun control, it's just ridiculous. It's like pushing for pressure cooker control after the explosion.
Right. What other things can you do with a pressure cooker other than kill people?
You can cook food.
Right. What other things can you do with a gun other than shoot things?
You can, other than shooting?
Yeah.
Other than shooting, well, I guess you can use it as a walking stick.
Are you guys aware how much sheer dumbass is in your country? I mean, we're talking a shitload of dumbass. Oh, my God. Fox News going absolutely crazy. Hyping up the racist rhetoric so that basically we can start, oh, I don't know, throwing anybody out of the country who has a religion we don't like. Because as Ann Coulter says, immigration's not working. And it's a country of immigrants. Okay, calm down. Oh, my God. And, of course, O'Reilly, immediately. You're not saying that Islam is at fault. You know, he's sitting there saying Obama's not being... He's not being shrill enough. No, he's trying to be calm. Because calmness is what doesn't get you into the problems we had after the last big terrorist problem. And of course, one of my favorites, ladies and gentlemen, Glenn Beck and Alex Jones, who are absolutely convinced that the entire Boston bombing, get this, was a massive conspiracy involving the government. Jesus Christ. Now, it's not funny because basically what Alex Jones and Alex Jones basically thinks that the entire Boston bombing was a black flag operation, that it was a cunningly conceived master plan. And Glenn Beck was on O'Reilly this week saying that basically that he concurred that it was an utterly, thrillingly complex mastermind kind of terrorist bombing. Obviously part of a huge plot by the government or Al-Qaeda or both. We don't know. let's have a look at exactly what happened, okay? Because quite frankly, this is what Glenn Beck has been saying in the last few weeks. He says he knows how foreign affairs works. And on April 18th, he announced that his website, The Blaze, was breaking news about the Boston Marathon bombing, that a Saudi national student on a student visa was absolutely involved in the Patriots Day blast and was being deported by the U.S. government for security reasons. Beck went further, claimed that the student, or as he called him, the dirtbag, as the host described him, was possibly the ringleader in the bombing that killed 3 people and injured more than 100. Now, Beck urged listeners to spread the breaking news via Twitter and Facebook because he warned the mainstream media would not cover this revelation. But the right-wing media would pick up the slack, and Fox News' Hannity helped spread the story about this poor schmuck who happened to be a Saudi nationalist. Okay? And their belief was that the government was covering up the involvement of this Saudi nationalist. Well, the truth was, and we had this with Michael Savage the other day, the truth was this guy had nothing to do with it. Nothing. He made wild allegations about a completely innocent guy. Officials at the Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the Department of Homeland Security both soundly denied the story, explained that there were 2 different Saudi nationals. One was recovering in a Boston hospital who had witnessed and had been injured in the explosions, but was not a suspect, and another in ICE custody who was unrelated to the bombing investigation. Beck responded by calling for President Obama to be impeached for what he considered the sprawling government cover-up that was now surrounding the student, Saudi Arabia and Al-Qaeda. You have such shitloads of dumbass, and it's so well-funded. I mean, where does Beck get a chance to go on Fox nationally and push this right-wing crap? Well, that's because Fox is pushing other crap, which is basically hate Islamics. Hate Islamics. Hate all Muslims. And about this being a master plan, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a little look at what exactly went on with these guys. You're saying that basically these 2 kids, who, by the way, were a bunch of deluded, stupid, fucked up idiots. They were, okay? We're not talking a master plan here. Now, let me see if I get the pronunciation. It's Zokar and Tamerlan, who I will now call Harold and Kumar. Jesus, man. These are some of the things that they did in this master plan of terrorism. 1, they wore a backwards hat with no sunglasses. Unlike his older brother, Zoka made little effort to prevent cameras from capturing his face, making it easier for him to be identified by the FBI security cameras. Okay? And indeed, classmates at University of Massachusetts Dartmouth did see him in the photo. But dismissed it, the similarity as being too far-fetched. I mean, he was on television immediately. He didn't react to the explosions. For 3 days, investigators pored over all available photos and surveillance videos of the blast area, searching for abnormal reactions. The complaint filed in federal court on Monday specifically cites Zokar's reaction to the first explosion as a pure giveaway. He didn't react to it at all. He glanced in the direction and kept walking. They left their car in the shop in Watertown to be serviced. The Wall Street Journal reported that Zoka stopped by an auto body shop in Watertown on Tuesday to pick up the Mercedes he'd brought in for repairs. It's just another day. What did you do? I bombed something. Don't say this. This gets better. He stayed in Boston. Okay, this is a master plan. Are you kidding me? The second bomb exploded at 2:49 p.m. last Monday. Tamerlan carjacked a Mercedes at 10:39 p.m. on Thursday. What did they do in the interim 3 days? Go to the gym? Yes. They check in on their busted car. They go to the gym. And in Zokar's case, they go to a party at UMass Dartmouth campus. What is this, Bill and Ted's terrorism adventure? During the three-day window in which their involvement was unknown, they made no attempt to flee. He went to a college party and got stoned because he's a fucking moron. They killed an MIT police officer because they are narcissistic psychos. Why did the brothers shoot 26-year-old Sean Collier? The murder at 10:30 p.m. on Thursday set in motion events that would ultimately lead to their capture. They weren't thinking. And then they ran out of cash. When Tom Moran carjacked a Mercedes on Thursday night, he and his older brother had one thing in mind: get cash fast. So they emptied $800 from an ATM using their victim's PIN number before they reached the accountant limit. Holding up a stranger for money suggests a woeful lack of planning on their part that helped alert them to the authorities, and they didn't understand how ATMs worked. After reaching the daily withdrawal limit at one ATM, Schmucko and Schmucko 2, apparently not realizing that the machines are part of an interconnected system, decided to try their luck at two different machines. The quest to find a working ATM was how they ended up, coincidentally, at a 7-Eleven in Cambridge about the same time it was the scene of an armed robbery, and they got spotted on the security camera there. Then, to top it all off, Harold and Kumar, according to the complaint, Zokar got into the Mercedes. He immediately told the driver, "Did you hear what happened about the Boston explosion?" And he turned to him and said, "I did that." That meant their cover would immediately be blown if the driver escaped, which, by the way, they stopped for snacks on the road. And the hostage escaped after the brothers stopped at a gas station at Memorial Drive to buy snacks. He was ruffling through his wallet and put down his gun. The guy reached over, unbuckled his buckle, and ran out the door. It kept the hostage's phone. The Tsarnaevs continued on with their hostage, but they did have his phone, which allowed police to track them via GPS. This guy hasn't even seen Law and Order episodes. They bring a BB gun, the weapon used by the two suspects, according to the police, a pressure cooker bomb, seven IEDs, an M4 carbine, two handguns, and a BB gun. No, Glenn, this is not a master plan by the lords of the universe. This is not a conspiracy from any of the brainier parts of Al-Qaeda. This is two schmucks, two stoned assholes, two psychotic little pricks who watched the internet and got it into their heads that they were going to, you know, win one for Allah. So you can stop stirring up the Islamic hatred, boyos. I know you see this as some really good opportunity because you like getting, you know, the apes in the cage really angry. You like it when they go crazy. But calm the fuck down. And of course, the only thing that, you know, Beck, or as we call him, Lonesome Rhodes, he's probably borderline psychotic. I think Glenn Beck has got to be a psychotic. Ann Coulter, she's just vile. She's using this as a great opportunity to push her racism. In any case, all of them, Mr. Jones, Mr. Beck, Ms. Coulter, Mr. Hannity, Mr. O'Reilly, you all wearing the tinfoil hat this week because you are major league crazy. Now, before we leave, I did want to leave you with just one absolutely positive story. They passed single-sex marriage in New Zealand. And this was one of the nicest things I have seen all week. It happened in New Zealand this week. Single-sex marriage was passed by the New Zealand Parliament. Now, what I'm going to play you right now is the New Zealand Parliament when they cast the final vote and it was passed. And something really, really amazing. The people you're going to hear when the bill gets passed, the people you're going to hear are the people in the stalls, the, you know, civilians, the public in the parliament chamber.
members. The ayes are 77. The noes are 44.
Amendment Bill, third reading.
Now, I understand...
To borrow from Nathaniel Maddow, that was the best new thing in the world this week. I love that. If you want to reach us, we're at www.thebillshow.xpr.blog.com. You can friend us on Facebook, and please do. We're at the Bill Show on XPR, the Bill Show on XPR on Facebook. And of course, if you want to get us on Stitcher, yes, you can. We're on Stitcher Radio now, as you heard on the promo. And if you want to get us on Stitcher, just put in on the search engine, the little search engine on Stitcher, The Bill Show, This Week in Politics, and you'll get us on Stitcher. Please favorite us on Stitcher. It would be great. And if you want to listen to our, you can get us through iTunes, or you can listen to us at Podbean at www.expatprogressive.podbean.com. And we tweet occasionally, and our tweet address is Bills on XPR. Thanks for tuning in this week. I hope you have a great week, and we'll see you soon. Bye.